Hello, and welcome back to the Consistency Project podcast. New Year's is upon us, which means registration for my Three Pillars Method Masterclass is now open. This masterclass is primarily for individuals who want to find their personalized caloric targets for their goals. You will come up with a plan that not only accounts for your genetics, but also allows you to reach your weight or body composition goals, fuel your workouts, and most of all, live a normal life while doing it. It's for individuals who, after going down a bunch of different rabbit holes, are looking for that science-backed, sustainable plan that is actually built around the foods you love and becomes your forever nutrition plan. Here's Gail from the last cohort.
I think the game changer is where you learn, okay, here is my deficit that I can sustain without getting hangry. That, I think, is the million-dollar question that a lot of us are looking for is how much can I eat to lose weight? How much can I eat to maintain that weight? My goal going into this was only to lose that last 5 pounds. But to this point, I've lost 8 pounds. I had 4 vacations during this class, and I lost 5 pounds at the end of the class. That was a game changer for my husband too, because he's like, oh my gosh, we don't have to hide in the hotel room and eat weird stuff. And it's not hard. When I first started losing weight, I'm like, I feel like I'm not earning it as much as I had to do with other diet and exercise programs. For some reason, she just eases you into everything and then it just starts working. I'm pissed that I'm 49 and I just found this.
So if you want to be able to take vacations, actually eat out on those vacations, and still reach your weight goals, head on over to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to register. Again, that's optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to register. The coach's version is also going on in January, and both links are in the show notes. Registration closes Tuesday, January 2nd, and the next group isn't until spring. We'll hear from more participants later, but for now, let's get into the show.
The detox industry founds itself on the notion that chemicals can be neatly divided into good and bad categories. In reality, for the vast majority of chemicals, it is the dose that makes the poison.
Hello and welcome to the Consistency Project podcast. My name is Patrick Cummings. As always, I am here with EC Sienkowski. Every week on the show, we aim to simplify the science of nutrition, health, and fitness, cutting through the noise to focus on the principles and practices that will help you perform better, feel better, and live better. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Hello, EC. How are you? And happy almost Christmas.
Happy. No,
is it Christmas already when this comes out? It may have already been Christmas.
Yes. Christmas has occurred and we are anxiously awaiting the new year.
All right. So this week we're going to talk about detox diets, what they are, why so many people are drawn to them. And of course, skipping to the end, why we should avoid them. And then we're going to wrap up with a listener question about the power of belief versus the reality of what is proven to work. Ready to go? Dive into detoxes.
That time of year.
Exactly. Maybe I think, and tell us if this is partly why we want to talk about this. Is this one of those things that happens in the new year where like, I'm going to start the year with a detox?
I think it is. I think a lot of things in nutrition really heighten around the new year. Certainly detox happens all the time, but New Year's is right around the corner. We've certainly got all these resolutions that are coming. You know, the most popular resolutions for this year, 2023, were to exercise more, to eat healthier, and to lose weight. I'm guessing those are going to be the same for 2024. Yep. And, you know, the diet industry in the US annually is worth $70 billion. And they are for sure ready to cash in on ways, hacks, gimmicks to sell you these new enticing ideas to get you after those goals, right? So as you mentioned, this episode, we're going to highlight one of the most common gimmicks, kind of detox diets, detox cleanses. I think we might hint at some other things to stay away from in the general wellness industry as well. But also, I think maybe woven in here is a small plea that if you are one of the 45 million Americans that diet every year, please don't be falling for this junk science. You're wasting your time and your money, and you really want to commit to those sustainable lifestyle changes. Of course, I'd love to have you in my masterclass at some point, but anybody who's preaching kind of the basics of mostly whole unprocessed foods done consistently, that's where you should invest your time and money.
Cool. We're going to talk a little bit about the masterclass later on in this episode. So stay tuned if you don't know what that is. All right. So detox, let's start there. Let's talk about what detox diets are, what they're selling, the arguments or the benefits that they think, you know, that they claim that that they have? Let's just start there. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. So in the wellness industry, detox is often used to mean some sort of cleaning of the body from just, quote, toxins. And that's actually the first red flag, this general use of the word toxins. We are going to come back to that. But in the wellness industry, toxins, in quotes, refer to this kind of kitchen sink of chemicals, food additives, prescription drugs or medications you've taken, environmental contaminants like heavy metals, maybe mercury, lead, arsenic, that type of stuff, PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, other maybe pollutants in the environment. And then sometimes even this detox is used to mean, okay, I just haven't been eating clean, which we all know from listening to this podcast is a little bit of just a marketing ploy, but I haven't been eating clean, so I need to detox from that. But the idea with this kind of wellness industry detox is there's some sort of buildup of these, quote, toxins in the body, almost like a sludge. Maybe it's accumulating in your GI tract. Maybe your liver sort of also has this accumulation because the liver is a key part of our detoxification system. And so that's sort of the general premise of them. They've got this accumulation. And then there's lots of different detox products that are sold online that might involve a period of fasting or semi-fasting, but you're going to take these X, Y, and Z supplements or take these specific herbal products or teas or fruit juices or only eat these foods, maybe even take some laxatives or enemas. And so it's very varied in how they sell it, but it's all sort of under this premise of we're cleaning out this accumulated buildup. So here's the problem with that. Your colon, your liver, your kidneys, they don't have a buildup of toxins that you need to clean out at specific intervals with specific diets or supplements or fasting or any of that stuff. There is no sludge in your colon. Your liver and your kidneys aren't waiting around for you to drink lemon juice for 5 days to work, right? These organs are continuously detoxing. They are continuously converting what people perceive as these toxins, but really just chemicals, and they're converting them into compounds that then can be eliminated in your bile, which might go out in your feces, or converted to compounds that are then lost in your urine. But the main point here is it's not like your organs are trapping them like a filter and collecting them. They are converting them and getting rid of them on the spot. So you don't need to fast and let your organs rest, let's say. You don't need to take a drink or a tea to stimulate this. It's just sort of happening, or it is happening, I should say. And this is where, you know, we've talked about half-truths a lot in marketing. It certainly is here in the detox realm, because we expel these compounds all the time, like I said, that we've broken down just in our urine. And so if you don't drink any liquid and become dehydrated, then sure, you won't detox, but you also won't live. So, I mean, does the lemon water help you detox? I guess, sort of, but any product that makes you go to the bathroom then kind of falls in this realm of technically detoxifying you. And this is where, you know, the marketing just gets so general to the point of being meaningless.
Mm. Okay, but there is some real detox, right? And there may be cases, or at least I'm guessing, there may be cases where we don't just break everything down and eliminate it, right? Like, for whatever reason. And of course, you know, the arguments that, like, there are some chemicals that we probably shouldn't, that we maybe are taking in that we shouldn't have in our bodies. So what about those arguments for detoxing?
Yeah, certainly there is some real legit detox. That is a medical term that has been hijacked mostly by the wellness industry for profit. And that's kind of another great example of a half-truth, where there is truly a medical detox, which is typically what we think of when we hear about the withdrawal from drugs or alcohol. There's also potentially other chemicals that you may truly need a detox from. But, you know, an alcoholic, for example, does need medication sometimes when they're coming off of that or becoming sober, because they might even have hallucinations or seizures that could be life-threatening, such that, like, detox is a very real thing in certain cases. And you are right. We are exposed to chemicals that have varying degrees of harm. I think this is a good time to touch on that word chemical. We did talk about it a little bit in an old podcast, but the word chemical gets thrown around a lot. And really, chemicals are just compounds made up of elements from the periodic table, and they're everywhere. Bananas contain chemicals.
No.
In the sense of what the word chemical means. You know, chemicals aren't just pesticides. They're all around us. There's natural and man-made chemicals, and both natural and made chemicals can be healthy or potentially harmful. And so whether or not the chemicals are you know, health promoting or neutral or harmful comes down to a lot of different factors. And this, of course, gets oversimplified kind of in the detox marketing realm. But some of the factors that come into play regarding chemicals is how were you exposed to it and where in the body is it? So we find, for example, mercury in the GI tract is relatively inert, doesn't do anything, but it can be really harmful if it's inhaled or injected. If we look at something like arsenic, we have to be really concerned about what the chemical form is, meaning is it the organic form, which tends to be harmless, or is it the inorganic form, which tends to be more harmful? And so if you were to do something like a total arsenic measurement out of your urine, you're not actually going to know the difference of which form we're talking about. And so the chemical form really matters. So that's those are some considerations to think about when we're like, okay, is this thing harmful or not? Another thing is dose, which should be no surprise to our listeners, the second name of this podcast. You know, how long were you exposed to it? Are you around this thing every day, all day? Were you exposed to it for 3 minutes? How much of it is in your body? And of course, in what form? Another factor that comes into play is how big is the person? Bigger bodies are less susceptible to toxicity because they're able to kind of disperse it. The dose isn't as big. Also, age. Young children, for example, are much more susceptible to lead poisoning because they absorb it at a rate that's much higher than adults. And then, of course, when we're considering all of this harm, we actually not just have to consider all of the factors of exposure that I just went through, but what's happening to the person in real life? What are their symptoms? Do they have X, Y, and Z symptoms that actually match what we know about X, Y, and Z exposure? Because not all chemicals kind of end up causing the same issues. So we want to make sure that we have the right problem. And a lot of times in treatment related to environmental exposure, we actually just have to remove the element from our environment. So if there's some sort of chemical, the best treatment we can do is not necessarily always detox the person. It's remove that chemical from the environment where that person is. And so when people or products, you know, really talk about that word, quote, toxins, it's actually a very good clue for you. They know very little about toxicology, health risk, exposure, metabolism, anything like that, because it really is highly, highly specific. I mean, think about all the things that I just mentioned to understand whether or not we actually have a problem and harm for that person. It's going to come down to the chemical. It's going to come down to the individual person. And so there's this awesome paper by Klein and Kat in the show notes that I just love this quote. The detox industry founds itself on the notion that chemicals can be neatly divided into good and bad categories. In reality, for the vast majority of chemicals, it is the dose that makes the poison. So our listeners are not surprised to hear that. Now, I do want to pick up on one other thing, though. We are exposed to plenty of chemicals that aren't necessary from a nutrition perspective, and yes, at high doses are problematic. We are exposed to these things like heavy metals that I mentioned and PCBs that I mentioned from industrialization and the downstream effects of just having them now in our environment. And the liver and the kidney, while they detoxify continuously, they are not, quote, perfect in a single pass. So the first time the PCBs go through the liver, it doesn't mean that all of the PCBs are cleared from the body. And so there is some level of chemicals that will continue to circulate in your body. And of course, just walking around in our modern industrial world, we get continuously exposed to more of these chemicals. So most everyone has some level of non-essential man-made chemicals in their body. The vast majority of Americans have low but detectable levels of metal in their urine, for example. The vast majority of us have these PCBs, again, these persistent organic compounds that were used in things like pesticides and electrical equipment historically are found in our body. And in fact, these persistent organic pollutants like PCBs can accumulate in our fat because our body doesn't clear them, like I said, in the one first pass. And I realize all of that sounds quite bad, but here's the rub for that. There's no scientific consensus of how much their low-level exposure is actually harmful to us. So presence doesn't mean harm. I know that's unsettling to hear, but our technology is so good. We can detect things that are so, so low in quantity, but we don't actually know, does that matter? is that actually affecting us? And so this is where you'll hear these fear-mongering headlines like, oh my gosh, PCBs are found in breast milk. But it's like, okay, but at what level? And what are the health effects of that level? And the one other thing I want to say, I know I've been going in here for a little bit, but when we think about a classic detox products that are like detox teas or a GI, you know, cleaning out the sludge idea, well, remember I just said that some of these compounds accumulate in your fat. So what the heck is flushing your GI system going to do? This is where something that's just like, oh, we clean out the toxins. It's like, okay, well, if we clean out your GI system, that's not going to touch any of these, quote, toxins in the accumulated fat. So again, there's just kind of a misapplication of this general term toxins without understanding the level of specificity that comes with each different compound that we're talking about.
Got it. Okay. So what I'm hearing is that mostly what we're doing is creating very expensive urine. We're spending a lot of money to literally flush it down the toilet. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Literally. Quite literally.
Other than that.
Yeah.
Other than that, joking aside, what else might be the actual, you know, real life risks of going down this road of detoxing and really trying to figure out how to quote unquote detox oneself?
Isn't that a trip to this sort of thing about like you're literally flushing money down the toilet? Like literally? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think some of the problems with these tests and these products that we've talked about before has issues of just financial loss, flushing down the toilet, neuroses about conditions that you don't actually have, or self-man-made problems, for lack of a better word. And I think another one that's really important to highlight that's problematic is actual physical harm to you from these products. You know, I think sometimes we might write off, oh, I just spent some money on X, Y, and Z and it doesn't work. Or, oh, whatever, I thought I had this, but I didn't. But then we also have to think about, oh, I actually might be worse off because of it. And so I wanted to highlight a couple of the common junk science tests that are often used in sort of this wellness detox. And these tests not only prey on the worried well, which we've talked about before, but I think they also prey on people who truly do have conditions that are hard to diagnose and treat. You know, there's a very well-known doctor in the functional medicine crowd who has promoted the notion that accumulating heavy metals are the reasons for generalized conditions like chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, insomnia, digestive problems. So a huge umbrella of cases. And this doctor will also claim that the heavy metal accumulation is something that the conventional medicine system just overlooks. You know, the conventional medicine system just hasn't accepted these new cutting edge tests and treatments. Oh, and of course, buy my supplements to help with the detox, but I digress. And so some of the common functional medicine tests that are used for heavy metal contamination, let's say, are either hair and nail testing or what is known as a provoked urine test. In this urine test, they use something called a chelating agent. So that you basically have a compound that will bind metals and then you're able to kind of expel them in the urine. So And the reason why the conventional medicine system hasn't accepted these types of tests is not because they're not cutting edge enough. It's because they're scams. And this is what's such a trip. You know, the natural practitioners will be able to claim, oh, we're so ahead of the curve, you know, but they literally are selling you snake oil. And so there's this great little document the American College of Medical Toxicity has put out, 10 things physicians and patients should question. It's really written for the layperson. I'll put it in the show notes, but they specifically call out, okay, do not order these provoked urine challenge tests that use a chelating agent and do not do hair testings because they're so unreliable, especially for these really generalized symptoms that people have. For that chelation process, the junk science practitioners will kind of give you the compound, you'll pee out, you know, let's say some metals, and they'll say, see, we've detoxified you, when in reality, there's been nothing done to help your health. They did take your money and they've potentially put you at unnecessary risk. This was something that was super interesting to me, that Oregon's public health department has reported 3 deaths associated with chelation therapy, and the CDC reported deaths of 3 individuals with heart attacks due to low blood calcium following chelation. One of those was a 5-year-old being treated for autism. And so there's a lot in this natural realm that kind of looks at doing these alternative practices for like healing diseases such as autism, and oh, it's because they have this heavy metal exposure and that's what caused it, blah, blah, blah. But the chelation stuff is so risky because you actually are not just binding what you think are toxins. You have the ability to bind and remove metals in the body, like calcium, that are actually needed for a working body. And therefore, that's why it's so risky. And then hair testing, like I said, is another scam. You very likely have contamination on your hair just from walking around and being exposed to the industrial systems that we have. And so therefore, it's not a valid representation of what is actually in your body. It might just be deposited there from being out in exposure to the environment. It might have nothing to do with what's in your environment. We also know that it's very likely that we need different tests for different metals. So we'll often go to these natural practitioners and say, oh, we'll just test your hair for umpteen metals. That's not actually the accurate way to do it. So those are just kind of highlighting two of the tests related to heavy metal testing that are scams or could be harmful. I think it's important to realize that this stuff shows up all over in the detox industry, because you can develop water toxicity or hyponatremia. That's when your brain swells. Basically, you can die from that because you've had too much water. There's a case report in the show notes of a healthy individual who went to the ICU because they were drinking more than a gallon a day on this 5 days detox diet. You know, water, something that we believe is just so healthy all the time. Yes, there is even an unsafe dose of that. There's also the potential for contamination from the product that you're using to clear your body of toxins, but you might actually be getting more exposed to the same toxins, which is such a trip to me. I mean, if you think about it, like, oh, I'm going to take these herbal products to, quote, flush out these toxins. These herbal products are often contaminated with the very toxins that you might be trying to get rid of. So there's a safer paper in the show notes that was looking at lead, mercury, and arsenic in various Ayurvedic medicines sold in the US and India. And 20% of the products sold in the US, which was actually higher than what was found in the products in India, were contaminated with heavy metals and to a level that exceeded acceptable daily intake. So here you're taking this product that you think is for your health overall, and it's actually contaminated with metals to a level that exceeds standards. And I just have to go over one more shocking one, because this one was crazy to me. There's this last name's hard to say. A Schwafelberg paper in the show notes. They actually looked at 26 prenatal vitamins from a Canadian health food stores, outlets, pharmacies. And I know we're talking about detoxification now. I'm switched to prenatal, but stay with me. 39% of the samples of these prenatal vitamins contains lead that exceeded the standards for lead toxicity. 39% of the samples from 26 different prenatal vitamins exceeded the standards for lead toxicity, which I just said lead is so problematic, especially in the developmental age for kids. So here, someone who, unrelated to detox, could be taking a supplement under the guise of general health for their baby, yet creating a potential toxicity issue from the heavy metal exposure to their child. Now, I know that causes a lot of fear and unrest. I want to say that not every product is like this. Certainly, there are going to be products that are, you know, more pure, and that's why you can go through that certification process. But there's so many examples of contamination in supplements that, especially to start doing any of these, quote, treatments for detox, which are unproven, it's much more likely you're exposing yourself to the very toxin that you are trying to avoid than actually doing anything that is health promoting.
Hmm. I want to ask you about why these things are so popular, but first, and I think about this a lot of times when we talk, or, you know, in this, around these kinds of things, which is, you know, you had mentioned at least, one of the arguments that folks will make is like, this is so ahead of the curve, the quote unquote conventional medicine complex doesn't understand it, et cetera. And so with that in mind, is it in your opinion, is it the case that what they're saying is just simply not true? Or is it just like what they're saying hasn't been proven, and yet they're saying it as though it has been proven? Because to me, there's enough of a difference between those two things that it feels worth understanding.
You mean the natural practitioners, are what they saying could potentially be true?
Yeah. Is it? Yeah, exactly. And we just don't know yet because for whatever reason, we can't, you know, again, for all the reasons that science is hard. Yeah. Or is it like, no, what you're saying is actually is contradicted by the research?
Yes. So I think it's a little bit of both. We certainly don't know all of the risks associated with low-level exposure because of what you just said. Science is hard to know what's going to happen if we're exposed to this really low amount of chemical for 50 years. I mean, we're exposed to so many low amounts of chemicals for 50 years. How are we going to know exactly that it's the phthalate versus the PCBs that is the problem? So yes, science is very hard to do. And so I think there's a little bit of that, of there could be something that we realize X years from now. We've done that already with various exposures and banned various chemicals. But there's also tests on the market that they're using that scientifically do not prove what they think it proves. A big thing in testing is having tests that are valid and reliable. What do I mean by that? That they actually are measuring the thing that we think they're going to measure and that you can repeat it across people. And there are tests that are being sold to people that haven't been doing that. Just like I said, with the hair testing, you might go and say, okay, I'm going to get 5 metals tested. Well, when you go to an analytical chemist and they're like, okay, well, that's not the way that you test for these 5 metals. You have to use this procedure for arsenic. You have to use this procedure for lead and so on and so forth. And so I think there's a mix of that in there for sure, that these tests actually do not have the evidence and evidence to counter exactly what the people are saying. At the same time, is there potential that somewhere down the line we will develop more understanding or different test to then, you know, link it to a health problem? Yes, there also is that possibility.
Okay, back to the conversation, the detox. Why are they so popular? Why, like, you know, we started this with like, you know, it's the new year. This is something that people, you know, clearly spend a lot of money on and put a lot of hope in. Why, in your mind, why is it so popular? Why has it stuck around for so long?
Yeah, I think, you know, something that we've said before, and I don't want to, you know, belabor too much, is that quick fix idea. Certainly that's always attractive. I think specific though to this that I wanted to call out, one of the things that I learned looking through some of the research related to this is from a historical perspective, we've been sort of obsessed with the idea of the body needing cleansing or cleaning at some point. Evidently, there's some writings from Egyptians in the 16th century BC that indicate disease was believed to be the result of kind of decomposing wastes in the intestines. And that idea continues to permeate since that time in various literature and in various cultures. And it's kind of a trip to me that, you know, we think of ourselves as so scientifically advanced here in 2023 from the Egyptian culture, or even the 1900s, which is where the word snake oil came about. There were medicine men that were traveling and literally advertising that they had this snake oil when nothing was actually in it. And so that's how the term came to be. It was just mineral oil, but they said it had this, you know, snake elixir or whatever. But yet here in 2023, you know, we think we're so advanced, yet so much on the market is literally modern day snake oil, to include these detox diet and tests. But again, that Klein and Kat paper is really good. It says the seductive power of detox diet presumably lies in their promise of purification and redemption, which are ideals that are deep rooted in human psychology. And continuing, it would be useful for future studies to examine the psychological aspects of detox diets and investigate why people are drawn to extreme diets that have no proven benefits. Holy cats, what a quote. It's a quote of the century. But yeah, there's something really psychological about this idea of cleansing, even purification ceremonies and rituals. I mean, that's definitely with more of a religious atonement type of perspective, but there is something very innate, it seems, to this idea of cleansing and purifying. The other thing that I want to touch on, besides that sort of innate human belief there seems to be, is I think just the power of the quote, big science in marketing. This was a really interesting study I came across that was looking at what makes people vulnerable to junk science, aka pseudoscience. And they were looking at topics related to COVID and GMOs. And they found that participants who trust science are more likely to believe and disseminate false claims that contains scientific references than false claims that do not. This is the O'Brien paper in the show notes, meaning just having the presence of references, whether they're accurate or not, make people believe the claims. And I think I find this all the time. We've talked about this ad nauseum on this. If there's some really popular book out, I'll go literally through all of the references and come to the conclusion that the references don't actually support the point that they're trying to make. Yet it's impossible for the layperson to do that, A, because of time, they have their own jobs and things to do, and B, just the lack of scientific understanding, right? So there's this wide dissemination of false claims simply because people will list 10 references, which might be completely irrelevant to their point. And it's impossible for a lot of people to know that. But the other one thing that I thought was interesting in all of this marketing to bring up is this use of scientific jargon that's so commonplace and it actually means nothing. Immune boosting. We're going to support healing. We're going to remove toxins. There was an an officer at NIH, Timothy Caulfield, called this science ploitation. Just sort of like hijacking words that sound meaningful, especially to the layperson, but a toxicologist would laugh at the idea of a tea removing toxins, right? So there's a lot of power in the marketing around science that is also making this so popular.
Yeah. It's interesting to me when you talk about the kind of the purification and cleansing thing to me, and I had not thought about this in this, you know, within this realm, but it sort of feels like, or at least I can imagine the thought being like, I'm going to do this cleansing to make up for the bad decisions I've made with my health. And it's like this weird, like blank canvas kind of belief that if I can do it and then I won't make those bad decisions anymore. And it's like, I can see how somebody might believe that. I wouldn't, but like, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, that it's a really interesting parallel, I think, to religion again. It's like this atonement of sins. And even for the non-religious, it's the, you know, atonement of the diet decisions you make or whatever. And it's just like, okay, let me fix what I did. Yet the body was already fixing what you were doing back when it was happening.
Right. That's so fascinating. Like, I'm going to fix it and I'm going to start over and I won't make these mistakes again. Like, again, I understand if you can sell me on that idea and this is the way that you can make up for, you can atone for your nutritional sins. Like, yeah, I can see a lot of people buying into that.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Okay. I think too, how deeply rooted that is in our psychology as a species.
Yes.
I mean, that I do not have the expertise to comment on more on that, except for the fact that that's just amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap this up. Anything else on detoxing, or maybe even the wellness industry more broadly that we want to talk about?
Yeah, I did want to kind of touch on a few things that people don't need. You know, I kind of hammered detox pretty hard here, but I think there's a lot of things that might be susceptible. We might be susceptible to, especially at this time of year. So just to start off, I saw this statistic about the global health and wellness industry. It's estimated at $4 trillion. Which includes all of the money we spend on these supplements and alternative quote therapies. That Klein and Kat paper in the show notes, they surveyed naturopathic doctors in the US, 92% of them use detoxification therapies, which again, we don't really have much proof that they're doing anything. I said this recently on a supplement episode that we do. We have to remember the US spends $50 billion on dietary supplements with $900 million of marketing behind it. Yet how many podcasts have we talked about the lack of real evidence for different supplements and biohacks? So I think kind of to close out here again, that little plea or call to people for the New Year's, do not fall for this stuff. We're going to link some of these episodes where we've talked all about this stuff in the show notes, but you do not need food sensitivity tests. You do not need gut health tests. You do not need DNA-based diet tests. You do not need detox tests. You do not need adrenal fatigue tests. Basically avoid any of these tests from the functional medicine or naturopathic crowd unless specifically directed by your MD. Yes, there are some MDs that are misguided. So if you're unsure, get a second opinion. And there are some tests that fall in those umbrellas that could be validated for very, very, very specific reasons, not general wellness though. The overwhelming majority of them are unnecessary, unreliable for general wellness. You do not need glucose monitor tests unless you're an insulin-dependent diabetic. You do not need a device to tell you if you're burning carbs or fat to hack your metabolism. Your hormones aren't out of whack. Your organs don't need to fast to rest. You do not need any supplements, shakes, teas, elixirs for preventative health or to lose weight. You don't even need to eat a specific list of foods. And you certainly do not need to avoid all processed foods or foods with any additives. What many, many, many people do need to feel better and to shed weight is to commit to eating mostly whole unprocessed foods in a sustainable way. And so this means not overly restricting calories, understanding you're not going to be perfect and realizing that this is a way of life, not a 10-day or 1-month quick fix.
Before we head into the next part of the show, here's your reminder to register for my January group of my Three Pillars Method Masterclass at optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass, and the link is in the show notes. This masterclass is where you're going to figure out your caloric targets personalized for your genetics and your body composition or fitness goals. You will develop a sustainable plan that allows you also to live your life and eat out with your family. Here's Wyleen from this year.
I learned what my true base was for maintenance, which was way higher than I've ever had before. So when I initiated the first small cut that I've done, it's been very sustainable and I'm not feeling hungry or fatigued like I was with those other programs. EC was pretty clear that sustainability is the most important thing and perfectionism kills everything. You can have the pizza with your family and you can still see results. I did want to lose a little bit of weight and I have lost 5 pounds, but I've gained so much more because my performance in my CrossFit workouts, my running has increased so much over the last couple months. It's really kind of mind blowing. I wasn't expecting that.
Going through the masterclass is how you are going to develop your science-backed, sustainable, forever nutrition plan. And it's where you're going to be able to ask questions in our live group coaching format along the way so that you get support and guidance from me, which is not possible in a podcast format. Here's Courtney from this year.
Since my first week or two in, I said, this is sustainable. I do think it's something that doesn't have you handcuffed to a food scale for the rest of your life, right? And you get to understand for yourself why your numbers are where they are and how they kind of play and come together, but also how you can flex it and make it work for you. You don't have to fit in this specific box every single day. The other pieces is the access to EC is really phenomenal. So every single post throughout the class, she's responding to everything and it's not superficial. She's really thinking about what are we experiencing and just providing great responses as well as encouragement, which I think is also something that I was looking for that I wasn't getting before.
So head on over to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to register. And calling all nutrition coaches or those who want to become a Three Pillars Method coach and teach people nutrition like I do. The coaches version is also kicking off in January, and you can go to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass coaches, one word. CEUs are also available for CrossFit, NASM, AFA, ACE, ACSM, and NSCA. And the link is also in the show notes. Registration for both closes January 2nd. Okay, let's get back to the show.
We have to wrap this episode up. A question from a listener, from her name is Lara. This is what she sent us. We frequently hear you say that certain health products simply aren't worth it for the advertised effect results. They are safe, but probably don't give the magic pill result people are looking for. While I agree with that, I've seen many friends and family members taking actions or products that I know might be silly, but they actually help them start to self-identify as someone who, quote unquote, makes healthy choices. For example, drinking kombucha, organic produce, adding salt to water, pink salt, fancy butter, essential oils, etc. Do you think when people start making small, healthy decisions that they start to duplicate and they eventually get healthier? Or do you find that the people who do that feel like they are way healthier than they actually are and don't end up making true foundational changes they need to see results? And before you answer it, please tell me what fancy butter is, because I need to know.
I think it implies probably grass-fed butter, kind of the conditions around the cows. I also think it does reflect a little bit of the composition of it. I think higher butter fat butter typically is more tasty and therefore probably more expensive. And I know that there are some butters on the market that are flavored like truffle butter. So I would imagine truffle butter falls in the fancy butter category.
Yeah, that is definitely fancy butter. Okay. all right. To Lara's actual question, yeah, not my silly one.
Yeah. What a great follow-up to what we just talked about. Gosh, this is hard because, you know, in a world of 8 billion people, virtually everything is possible. You know, there's always going to be someone who starts with drinking more tea and kombucha. And yeah, we talked about that on a few podcasts, both with Mark England and Adam Bornstein. you know, the power of the mind and just identifying as the person you want to be before you're there. And so I totally can see that, that how you just sort of being like, well, I'm this healthy person who thinks about my food choices. And that does trigger bigger and better changes that actually are meaningful. So yeah, is that possible? For sure. I think the overwhelming evidence suggests that's not really happening. I think for most people, that's not what is going on. Because then if we look at, we're just going to stick with weight loss, because again, most common goal that most people are trying to do these health changes for, we're not losing weight. And when we do lose weight, we gain it back. So then you have to start wondering, okay, well, is this really the best solution? Yeah, some people might get through that way, but it doesn't seem to be the majority of people. And so I think, again, it kind of comes back to there is a harm there. How much time and money do people spend on solutions that don't work? I mean, we're certainly in a time right now where every time you turn around, we're talking about the squeeze that we're feeling from inflation. Okay, how many diet products and supplements and whatever specific diet plan have you spent money on that got you nowhere? How many more months and years went by before you made no progress? And so that's what starts to really bother me. Yeah, I can see that it could jumpstart somebody. Doesn't seem to be happening more often than not.
Mm. It makes me think of, and this is maybe a leap of logic, but it makes me think of like the popularity of a book like Atomic Habits, which has sold like millions and millions and millions of, I don't know that anybody's habits have improved. I can't we buy the book, we maybe read the book, but we don't ever do anything beyond that, which obviously isn't the point. The point, if you pick up that book or if you pick up any of these products, and the point is the change, the whatever the change might be after you read the book, after you do the thing, after you take the thing. And to your point, that doesn't seem to be happening on a grand scale. Like, we would be a lot healthier if all of these things led to healthy humans.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's it too. The kombucha doesn't necessarily then make the person make decisions that alter the diet enough to make the change. And so they can spend all of this time. I think you've described it before as like they have motion, but they have no direction. Like, I can be doing detox teas and I can be taking this elixir in the morning and I can, I don't know, whatever else, stop eating after 7 p.m. and I see no progress. And then it's like, okay, I don't actually understand what is driving my progress. I'm doing all these things that are tangentially possibly related. Wow, that was a tongue twister. But like, I've never actually made any real progress. And so I think that's the other thing. Like, if somebody starts really getting into tea, let's say, so they drink tea in the morning and therefore they end up skipping breakfast or eating less at breakfast, that ultimately can lead to maybe a weight loss goal. But it comes with the understanding of why the tea is working that often isn't advertised. The tea is advertised because of antioxidants or detox or I don't even know whatever else, you know, purification and stuff like that, anti-inflammatory properties. When it's like, no, you're full on hot water and so you've cut back on calories.
Yep.
And so I think there's a little bit of that too, that like you can spend so much time doing actual changes, but there's no real motion in the direction that you're looking for.
Last thing maybe on that point is, you know, we'll often hear, and I think generally it's right, when you're trying to get healthier, the better practice is to focus on the process and not overly obsess with the finish line. Lots of reasons why that's the case. But I think one of the things you're pointing out is that we also can't ignore if we're getting closer to the finish line, right? And you talk about that all the time. I always go back to the cold plunge. Is it actually improving the performance that you say you're doing the cold plunge for? And so there is this bit of this weird paradox here where we're taking the tea and we think we're focusing on the process and the journey and we're following the prescription of becoming a healthier person, without ever picking our head up and say, okay, are we getting closer to the weight goal that I've got or the performance goal that I've got or the just generally feeling like a happier, healthier human being? So there is a bit of a balance that we need. It's not just ignore the finish line and it's certainly not ignore the process, but it's understanding that these two things need to work in conjunction with each other.
That's a great point. And to add on to that, we also have the layer of that the the duration at which we see change towards the finish line is quite slow. So, you know, not only do we have to make sure that we're losing weight, if that's ultimately our goal, but it turns out we can't measure weight on any single day and know if we've really made improvements. I often use the line about a 2-week delay at minimum because we got these pesky water weight fluctuations. So that's another thing that makes this process quite difficult, is we have to be looking at the end result, but know that I'm not going to get 10 more pull-ups in one day. I'm not going to lose 5 pounds in a week. And so there's also a little bit of patience on tracking to that end result while you're in it. Yeah.
Take it. All right. Well, I'm just really excited we got to talk about expensive urine and fancy butter today. Those are my two takeaways.
Check.
My two takeaways. So thank you, EC. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Happy Almost New Year to you. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. EC and I will be back next week for another episode of the Consistency Project Podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you are ready to ditch the fad diets, unnecessary supplements, and overly restrictive approaches to nutrition, my 3 Pillars Method Masterclass is for you, and registration is open at optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass. If you are sick and tired of trying to sift through all the contrary information online, and you just want a sustainable plan for your weight, body composition, and fitness goals, this 10-week class with my coaching throughout is for you. Here's Keith.
There's a lot of noise out there, and it's hard for most people to really start pulling apart, like, what is really good stuff, what's not good stuff. I started listening to your podcast, and it's kind of like, okay, this is good information. But there were certain questions that I wanted to ask. Being able to have access to you on the weekly calls to ask some of those questions, one of the things I really enjoy about you is you can go into the weeds and discuss it, but you're also able to say, here's a reality check, and we really need to kind of pay attention to the real world. So I started off at 205. So I got about 20 pounds that I needed to do. I'm down to 194 at this point. So I am well on my way to getting to where I need to be. And again, it's taking it in it nice, reasonable steps that I really think is going to be very sustainable for me long term.
Head on over to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to register. Doors close Tuesday, January 2nd, and the next group isn't until spring. And if you are a nutrition coach or want to be a nutrition coach, my coach's version is kicking off at the same time. If you want to teach the 3 Pillars method and get your clients' results like mine, head on over to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass coaches to register. You will learn my evidence-based system to drive clients to their weight, body composition, and fitness goals in a sustainable and realistic way. Yes, it's science-backed, but it also is something that works in the real world with the clients you have every day. Here's Sam.
The fact that BC is completely based in research, but she doesn't necessarily present it as the forefront, I think is really helpful to me. She thinks so much about the behavioral aspect of everything, and she won't give us research for the sake of giving research. She'll always give it to us through the lens of, how are your clients going to need this information, and how is it going to best serve them? She's very much interested in what is actually going to work with your clients. If your goal is to be a better coach for your clients, I think that this masterclass is a no-brainer. Working with EC is an absolute no-brainer.
Going through the masterclass as a coach is how you learn how to teach the method to others. And we also have live sessions to talk about specific coaching issues. Here's Madeline.
I think what's cool about it is I went into the masterclass kind of feeling like I knew most of what she was going to teach for the most part. And the thing that I learned was that this is, out of everything that I've done now, this is going to be the system that I'll use for myself. So not just in terms of it being something that I would assign to clients, like, it's just as easy for me to do it and apply to my life and then be able to kind of stand as a representative of it for clients. I think the thing that is probably most important for me was the fact that the application to myself allowed me to understand it in a way that I could teach it to other people. The masterclass is great for dealing with client issues that are kind of outside of the specific methodology, you know, how do you deal with clients who don't track properly? There's kind of that nice opportunity to talk through some of those coaching challenges that was 100% new for me.
So head on over to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclasscoaches to register by Tuesday, January 2nd. The coaches version can also earn you CrossFit, NASM, AFA, ACE, ACSM, or NSCA CEUs. The links for both masterclass versions are in the show notes, and I'm really looking forward to working with you.